This is an interview with Mr. Chico Murphy. Presently, he is supervisor of the maintenance department at A&I. This interview covers Bishop history from its founding in 1910 to the present. The interview was conducted on July the 31st, 1973, at Mr. Murphy's office on the A&I campus. The interviewer's name is Olga Rubalcaba. This tape is especially informative on anti-German practices by the Ku Klux Klan up to World War I.
I couldn't tell you too much about this number two. Let me say something first about this number two deal.
Well, just what you remember.
Name, Ed H. Murray, date of birth, born 1907, September the 14th. My job, I'm at A&I College on the maintenance for the last 5 years. Been working there. And I arrived at Bishop in February of 1911. The condition of time, a town was nothing left but the hotel, one general merchandise store, and a few houses. Of course, they had a nice park out there. A lot of sidewalks, but very few buildings.
Did you come with your family?
Yes. I was just a small boy. I was just about 3 years old, 3.5 years old when I arrived here. Came here with a train. We moved out east of Bishop, about 6.5 miles northeast. Landed out over there on a farm. There was just a few acres plowed. The rest was all just prairie. Had these 16,000 pounds of land at the time, and we had the birds of rattlesnakes, coyotes, deer, and in the wintertime, a lot of wild ducks. We caught many a coyote. And then coming, I remember when I used to come to Kingsville with my daddy, with a buggy and a horse, which was about 14 miles from our place out there. At that time, the road from Bishop to Kingsville is where it's now in Nueces County, but the county line just this side of Southern Nueces, which is the county line. We didn't have no road on the east side of the railroad. We crossed the railroad track, and the bridge was, all right, sir, about 300-400 yards west where the present one is on the highway. Kind of curved around and got back next to the railroad again. West, we stayed on the west side of the railroad track all the way into Kingsville. There was no road on the east side. Arrived, I remember that real well when we arrived in Kingsville. We had these little rings on the sidewalk where we tied our horses, our mules, our buggies, you know. And I still remember the water wagon they used to sprinkle the street to keep the dust down. That was an all-day trip, you know, living out there about 14 miles out there. And F.C. Bishop, I remember him. He was a very good salesman. I remember later on, he tried to sell my dad some land. He opened up a new area, which was called Catula, Texas, on out back in the west of here. And in fact, some of them bought some land for Mr. Feller. This Feller, one of the original pioneers, bought some land over there. My dad didn't, though. And I remember when he was talking to my daddy, he was telling me, so, well, you remember what nice land I sold to you? Everything went up. Well, that's the same way it's going to be in Catula, but it didn't turn out that way. So I'm glad we never did buy a move over there. He was a good salesman.
Did he live in Bishop?
Yes, he lived in Bishop, but he moved on later on then and opened, tried to develop more areas again. I faintly remember, I think he had a divorce and married. I'm not very positive about that.
Do you know why he went bankrupt? Do you have
any idea? I heard about that, but I don't remember that either, what happened. But that's true, though. I heard that too.
But he did go bankrupt.
Right.
Do you know about what year that was?
Oh, I imagine it might have been back in the 20s, early 20s. No, I was kind of small at that time, young. I don't remember too much about Mr. Bishop.
All right. We've heard that there was a community in Concordia of Germans. Could you tell us something about that?
Well, there's a Lutheran church out there. They call it Concordia. This same church still, but they moved into town, into the city now. This is St. Paul Lutheran Church. The big church is next to the football stadium at Bishop High School. That is the original church that was organized out there, which my father was a charter member of.
Why were the German people in Concordia?
They were all set up in that area. From Central Texas, which most of them came from Milam County, Thorndale, Texas. Some came from Spring, Houston. Some came from Lee County.
Do you ever remember any discrimination or ill feelings toward Germans during World War
I? World War I was right. It's when they had the Ku Klux Klan.
Could you tell us something
about that? Well, I was kind of small then, but I do remember that the Ku Klux Klan was organized, and of course, I don't, at that time, don't hold it up against anybody, because the news and all that just, you know, just make the people angry, you know. Now we realize it was a big mistake.
Do you remember some of the practices, maybe, or a location of where they had their meetings, what they did?
That I don't know. They had a location at Bishop. I do know, though, that they came out one day and picked up this preacher and took him out in the field and say they taught, feathered him. I don't know whether they did or not, but they whipped him.
Was he a German preacher, or what?
No, German and English. Okay. He also taught school.
This was during World War
I? Right. 1919.
Do you remember anything in World War II?
What's that?
World War II.
World War II, no, it was altogether different World War II. There was no discrimination or trouble whatsoever.
By that time,
you know, they realized, that, see, that was the first war, you know, in 1919, World War I.
Do you remember the preacher's name?
Oh, yes.
What is his name? Could you tell us about it?
Reverend A.E.M.O.E.B.U.S. Oak Neighbors, they called him. In fact, I just visited his daughter. She lives in LaGrange now. I just visited her about 4 months ago. We were through there, and she was born out east of Bishop. Her name is Miss Heather, in my pocket somewhere. She lives in LaGrange. She has a factory now. She bakes cakes and makes homemade noodles. And this same girl, she's somewhere 50 years old. She was born out there east of Bishop. We noticed it in Texas Star Paper magazine, and we have to stop by there. We have never seen each other in over 50 years.
Was he a preacher at the time that you were a member of the church?
Right.
Could you tell us something about whatever you want to recall? Anything that comes to mind?
Well, not particularly. He was a good sport. Big sport. He loved baseball. And, you know, we were all living out there in the country. We'd all have to drive buggy and a horse. He had a buggy and a horse to go to town, you know, to Bishop.
why do you think that this Charlie said it to you?
Well, I think it's kind of, you know, that it just took over, but over the law, you see. They wanted to. Now, I'm not positive whether they talked in front of him. That I don't know. I just heard, but I don't think they did, but I do know they whipped him.
Is it true that that the Concordia school system one time employed German teachers and conducted their classes in German?
Yes. Up to World War I, they did.
Did you attend the school?
That's where I learned my German.
Could you tell us something about what they were like when the teachers were there?
Well, they taught both German and English. You didn't have to take it if you didn't want to. Because our class, you know, all talk German. So I started school when I was 1950. September the 14th of my birthday was my first day of school. Never forget that. Preacher asked me, that was him right there, Mr. Lewis, asked me my age, and I told him 7 years on the dot. And then he taught this until 1919, which is about 5 years. I had German school, and I'm real proud of it. I can still, you print anything in German, I can read it. And I never had a day Spanish school that I could talk it. I had to learn it because we employed Latins at the farm. I grew up with it. And I can talk it. Being that I can talk German, and when you have German school, you write anything, print anything in Spanish, and I'll read it to you and tell you what it is. And I never had a day of school at it. See, one foreign language, what a how it helps, you know. So I'm proud of it, but I don't have much use for it now because they even guns them, all the old people are dead. But it does help me a whole lot in my Spanish.
Where was the preacher, the teacher?
He was from Central Texas, someplace, I forget. He had a family out there, his 3/4 children was born right out there. The two of them was born out there. He was there only 5, 6 years.
What was the classroom like?
Just that one classroom.
Yeah.
Just one big classroom, that's all. We had penmanship. Writing, arithmetic, language, reading, that's most of it. Read, writing, arithmetic, history, geography, taught all of that.
Where did you get your books from?
Well, we had to get them through some public school system. You know, it had to be the, well, later on then, you see, they call that parochial school. In fact, they still have the parochial school in Bishop today. No, there ain't been no German taught since World War I.
Why was it started?
Because they just never didn't want to start it no more.
Was it because of pressure, maybe?
Well, probably wouldn't be, but there never been no more since then.
Was it paid? Did your parents pay tuition?
No. The members of the church, their children went there, and they also paid, the members paid this teacher. It didn't cost the state nothing. The same way like the school they have there today. It's going to cost the state nothing. The members paid for it, parochial school. And they turned out some very good. My own daughter went through that parochial school. All my children went through that parochial school. And my daughter and her cousin, which was a brother of mine, had a group of students. They were in the same grade, and they were both two top honor students. Came from that parochial school. Eighth grade only, and then they went to high school 4 years.
Are you saying
that
the parochial school was only up to
8th
grade?
That's right, just up to 8th grade.
Did you graduate from that school and go to Bishop High School?
Yeah, I graduated out there. then I went to high school.
What was your feeling like towards you?
Oh, well, at that time, it was forgotten pretty fast, you know. After the war was over, everything was forgotten.
You mentioned the Ku Klux Klan. They were anti-German then, up to the World War II.
Right.
Were they also anti-Catholic or anti-Negro? Could you tell somebody about this?
Well, I don't recall no names.
No, you don't have to.
There were just old-timers that lived there at Bishop.
Were they?
And they just got together, you know, and they were young men, and they were not against any kind of religion, what that amounted to, that part, just because they were teaching German out there, and we had the war with Germany. The Ku Klux Klan just decided, well, they won't go out there and rip the preacher. That's what it amounted to. Oh, they had a lot of Judge Timon in Corpus Christi was a judge then. He straightened it out. He was a real nice fellow. He knew the Lord. Kind of straightened him out. He did him real good. A lot of those old timers there, their ancestors still living in Michigan. They're just as nice of friends too. They all forgot everything now. That's just one of those things, you know.
Could you remember what year, from what year to what year was the Ku Klux Klan?
Well, it was right during that war.
Yeah.
I do remember. Well, it did. I don't think it lasted too long after the war. They had them not only in Bishop, they had them all over the country. I heard of people everywhere up in the country, they had them too. They're not only in Bishop, but up in Central Texas, everywhere. They're just organization organized among themselves.
Could you make a general statement as to what segment of society the members were from? Were they wealthy, the middle, the poor?
All types. There was none of really wealthy those years, you know.
We heard a story about that a Negro doctor had been, by some accident, the jail had caught fire, and that he had died inside the jail. He had burned to death. Do you know anything about this?
No, I don't know. I don't remember that. I don't remember. That could have happened. During the Ku Klux Klan era, you mean?
Yes, during
that. That could have happened. You see, in 1919, I wasn't but 12 years old, born 1907.
Can you tell us something about maybe their dress or what they wore?
Oh, they had white sheets and a hood. Oh, yes, they were. I saw pictures and I seen them. But I mean, you couldn't recognize them. They were white. I imagine they had like a white sheet, you know, and white hoods. Just old American. That's the closest guy. That's the way you look. That I know. But they didn't want to be recognized. Nobody would know who it was. That's the closest guy.
Were your family ever frightened of it?
No. We were never afraid of anything. There were a few different individuals there in Bishop that was approached, but we have never had any trouble. Our family has.
Well, you wanted to tell us, Uncle, during World War I, did you experience any?
No, we didn't. Daddy just took care of his business, and they never bothered us.
We've heard something about Mother Lane and the new owners in Bishop. Do you know anything about that?
Yes. She was one of the faith healers. She lived in Bishop for a while and then she moved to Kingsville. And she would not charge. She just go there and, you know, and cure a lot of different people. A lot of different diseases. And just one of the people believed in her. But I never went there, but I remember them real well.
Can you tell us something about the people that come here?
Well, they come from everywhere. They come from all ways. In fact, just like west of Bishop, in the city limits of Bishop, just the western area there, there was a few cottages built that used to take care of people that came to see her. So they had a place to stay. She lived in that area. But she would not charge, but not the people was donated, you know. And I was in the house.
You were in her
house? Yeah.
Tell us something about
how old she was. Oh, I'd say kind of heavy set rock, and she, at that time, I don't know what year that was. That must have been back in the 30s, I imagine. I don't know, in the 30s. And you just go there and wait your turn and take you in the room and put a sheet over you, and she just, I don't know what she'd do. And my nephew was there, and he had some kind of trouble, and when she got through, she had a handful of watermelon seeds, and he said, "By God, I eat watermelon this morning." So there's a real believer out of him. It's almost as believe it or not. I never believed in it, but a lot of them just believe it.
Did she say prayers over the people while she was healing them, or?
No, not that I know of.
Did she
say no prayers? No, she was just, well, let's put the sheet over you and she'd rub, you know, kind of rub like, and she used to sell, so. Bringing those back, you know, crumbling, you know, just rub. So, she might have silently, but she wouldn't have talked to you. Just what people told me that went there, that's all I know. I never had no treatment for my mom because I didn't believe it.
Who was she staying with?
She lived out there.
Oh.
I forget the people's name. I think the name was Gonzalez or somebody. Lived in that area, in that neighborhood. But she later on moved to Kingsville. She lived in Kingsville. I lived on East Street. She actually just moved off islands last afternoon. But I do remember that.
Did she speak Spanish? Did she address the people? Or?
She could talk with languages.
We've heard that she also had seances. I mean, she talked to the dead
sitting
around the table and all
this. Well, that I don't know. That's possible. There's probably a lot of things that she could do that I don't know about. But there's just not a lot of people, you know, that went to a doctor, had a certain disease or something, you know, and just couldn't be cured. And at the last resort, they just went to her. And they were cured. And that made rivers out of it. And that's the people just come from everywhere. But you didn't cure everybody. But you know, when you get just, can you cure your mind and just try, you're in a trial anyway. That's the way most of them were. That is really fascinating, I tell you.
Indeed, a lot of the people from Bishop have not go to
the train. Well, they had more out-of-town people than local people go there. Of course, they would get around, you know, and it wouldn't be too many local people go there. But
few of them. What was their reaction? Did they like it or not?
Some of them did. I don't know what to think about it. What would you think about it? It's just hard to say.
In dealing with religion, you said that you were a member of a Lutheran church. Do you remember anything about bishop churches, or maybe you could describe your own church,
description Of which one? Which church?
Any
church. Oh, gosh. Bishop has a lot of churches. Church of Christ, Methodist Church, Baptist Church, two different Lutheran churches, Catholic Church, Presbyterian Church. Yes. What's Christian Church? For a little town, there's a lot of churches. Well, those early settlers, you know, had so many different, you know, so they all started the church. I imagine that's the way it starts.
Would you like to talk about the Lutheran church going on, talking about the preacher, maybe the description of the church, the pews and so on?
Well, that old, the first church, you know, up there at East Bishop, that was a church and a school combined. And a school in there and a church too. Then in 1928, they built a new church. It's still sitting out there, but it's not a historical building. Just, they're just keeping it up with a cyclone fence around it. The county's taking care of it, because the graveyard is out there. They heat up the graveyard. They're making a park up there where people can go in. And since they moved to town, Bishop, that church was built in 1928. 26, 27. I remember all lumber out there and tile in the Model T truck. I wouldn't imagine any of the old house building. That's still sitting out there, East of Bishop. But nothing in it, it's just waiting. Then the same, that's been moved into Bishop now, which is the one next to the football, just north of the football stadium of Bishop. See, that church was 1964, I believe. It's about 10 years. Been up just 10 years ago. There's some 47, 57, about 35 years it was off there, another one. I remember this, that in 1928, when this second church was built out in East Bishop, my father was the first one that was buried there. And me and my wife were the second one married there.
Who were the first?
It was a couple from Driscoll. They didn't have much of a wedding, though.
Is your wife originally from Bishop also?
Well, she came there, but she came there in 1916, I think. She came in 17. She came about 9, 10 years later than we did. She came from Central Texas, Lee County. And I came from Farmdale, Texas, Milam County. That's close to Rockville.
We'd like
to know something about this. Yeah, but my brother never sent me to that school because this German, somebody even teaches German. He did teach here about 4 or 5 years ago, 3 years ago. And thought it was this set of real Gruber. About 3 years ago, his mother came over there from Germany. She couldn't talk to anybody, but his professor said, "Did Mr. and Miss Murphy?" said, "I think they can talk to her." So we did. She asked us, "Well, when did we come over here from Germany?" I says, "We never did." I'm not seeing it. I just went to school with her. She thought, "Well, that was something you know she'd never run into." So I'm proud that my parents sent me. I had at least so many years, 4 or 5 years of German. I don't have much use for it now. If I had a list to go anywhere in the German community, it helps, so I don't have nobody to talk to. In fact, it'd be a little hard for me to talk to anyway, because you kind of forget, you see. But reading, you never forget. It's something that stick with you. But it does help my Spanish. When I'm making lots of use out of it.
Is your wife German also?
Yes, she had German school too, same school.
Yeah.
But she had write 1 year less. She can read and write it too.
What's the population in Concordia, sir?
Oh, I'd say about every 160 acres or so. There was a family living out there. Just, you mean in Bishop?
In the German community.
Oh, well. It's pretty hard to figure out. I'd say we were about maybe 30 families or so in there. See, there's a bunch of them out west of Bishop, too. They didn't even go to that church at all. There's some more on West of Bishop.
During the Prohibition in the 1920s, do you remember anything about how Bishop voted, whether what politics were like there at that time, between Al Smith and Herbert Hoover, the Wet versus the Dry? Do you remember?
Well, Bishop was dry. Bishop was dry. There never, that I recall, ever was wet. First time they were. See, when did they repeal that law? I mean, back in late 20s, somewhere along in there. See, the whole state was dry. But Bishop stayed dry. They don't have liquor today yet. They will never, I don't think Bishop will ever vote for liquor. Just like Kingsville or Driscoll. Well, they don't just stay, they don't need it. They have beer. That's all I can figure out.
Do you know, or did you run into anybody back then who was brewing their own, like,
oh,
bootleg?
Oh, everywhere.
Could you tell us a little bit?
Well, everybody made their own brew. That was not against the law. Make your own beer.
Oh, we heard that it was made in bathtubs.
No.
Tell us about your version.
Okay, have about a 10, 15-gallon crock. You buy it in the grocery store, a can of milk. You put water in there and put that in the crock. And put about, some use 5 pounds of sugar, some 3, some 8. All depends. And a cake of yeast. And cover it up. We'll put a towel over it. Let it set there. And it's going to do it in about 3 days, depending on the temperature. In winter time, they put cotton seed around it, a hose to keep the temperature. In the summertime, well, they just leave it open outside in a heating out. Out building, some building, smoke house, we call it, but somewhere, garage. And in 3 days, they'd have you could buy one of these testers. We'd put that thing in there, and when it gets to that red mark, it was ready to put the bottles. You take a hose, siphon hose, and you fill, wash all your bottles out, you see. Fill all these bottles, then you have a little cap, or you buy these caps, and you go to the store, cap it, put it away.
Did they ever explode?
If you cap it too soon, it'll explode. Now, I helped my dad make some homebrew. I capped it. I always had to wash the bottles. And I remember one day you put it in the house in the pantry, and we didn't have a tester, and kept it a little too soon, and all of a sudden, pow, one bottle busted. Mother, I remember Mother said, what in the world is that? Mother said, ain't nothing, just one bottle, cut too soon. But everybody made homebrew those years. harvest the barley in that in the summertime. They wouldn't probably ever make it in the wintertime months, but in the summertime it was hot. I remember that, really. But then they had big weddings. I remember Orange Grove to a wedding during that homebrew day. We call it homebrew days, that's the dry years. We had barbecue and a good sausage and everything, you know, and I just happened to know these people that got married, and we had an invitation. And they had a bathtub. They put the homebrew in, put ice on top. That's really cool.
Everybody just took out of the bathtub.
What do you mean, smuggling what?
Liquor.
Oh, I would think there would probably be, you could probably in Corpus, I heard about it in Corpus, you know, certain places you could buy. We call it moonshine. Cornwood liquor, you know. Still somebody still. I have never seen it still, never seen it made, nothing like that. But that was dangerous to buy or food it because we never knew what that was going to go against. Now that was against the law, because they were making homebrew against the law. If you sell it, they made a moonshine because you get by the tax. But to make homebrew for your own uses, that's so big of a day. In fact, I know some people made it here about 3 years ago.
You all don't make it anymore?
Oh, no, I haven't. And since you came back again, it doesn't taste that good again. You can develop a taste to it, all right. I wouldn't fool with it, mess with it, that's too much trouble. Especially the price of sugar now. Yeah, I remember the days.
Do you remember anything from World War II? Did you go to the war or
no?
Or something?
I didn't go. I was too young for World War I and was too old for World War II. So I missed it.
What was the feeling of the sugar?
Really patriotic. It was just day and night difference. There was not no comparison between one World War I and two. Because all the boys, went, regardless what nationality they were, it didn't make any difference. They were all about as much war bonds and probably more, a lot of good. People just changed altogether World War II.
It's
going as usual,
though? Yes. When was Salami started?
How's that?
When was
Salami started? Salami started in the early 40s, I think.
This was during the time of the war, also?
Apparently, Salami was opened up in the early 40s. I worked at the base. I worked at the naval base in King. I also worked at the base at Corpus when they built it. That was in 39 before the war. My carpenter got that. He drove back and forth every day. The Salamis opened up after that in the 40s. Not too much about World War II.
Let's go down to farming. Could you tell us something about what kind of farming your father did? What methods of what crops or what labor you might have used?
Well, very early when we first moved down, it was mostly all cotton. We plowed with mules and horses. figure on them horses and train them and plow. And they were wild. We had a lot of, we call them runaways, you know, they'd run all over the wagon, you know, and we saw lots of that. My mother was hit in 1924 or 5, I think, my daddy bought the first tractor. I used to cut stalks and plow with some horses, you know, and some of them, you know, were wild, you know, ready to run off, you know, and run off with the stalk cutter, you know, we stopping them. It was dangerous. And I've never been so relieved and tickled to death when my dad traded in those horses and bought a tractor. That was the happiest moment of my life. I was about, let's see, 17 years old. And we had far more tractors. We started most of our farm with tractors. And then we all had steel wheels on these tractors. Land I was farming was kind of on the sandy side. And I was the first one, and in the 30s, I was the first one east of Bishop that bought rubber tires to put on a tractor. In 1930s. I tried it out, and what a difference it was. And all the farmers in the neighborhood, they laughed at me. They'd come and ask me what I thought about rubber tires. I said, well, if I ever had to farm this land with steel wheels again, I'd get farming. That's all I have to say. Now, we look around and see how many tractors you see on steel wheels. I didn't see them no more. That's the way time cycle changed. Combine. Well, it was out at the second combine, East Bishop. Of course, it was filled with a tractor there, not like today, but they were big business. At that time, the grain was developed and planted for combining and for robining and making shocks. Since then, they changed all this grain and they bred it up well, especially for combining. Agriculture department, you know, and in college they study those things, and they got a type of grain out of this plant that's special for combine. Now they have these big machines, so gliders and everything. It changes, you know.
What kind of labor did your father employ to
bring in? Oh, that's another story.
Could you tell us about that?
Yes. We didn't have no transportation. Saturday afternoons, or Saturdays, all day, that little town of Bishop, you couldn't walk down the street. The cotton picking season, which lasted about 2 months at least, didn't have one. That was always the busy time of the year. All our cotton pickers were brought in from other areas. They stayed right on their ranch, on the farm, camped right on out there. Naturally, we took them to town to buy the groceries, and they'd spend the day in town, and we'd bring them back. They didn't have any transportation. So we took them there, bought the groceries, and brought them back. Saturday night, the evening was a dance for them. And I remember the butt storm, Javelin farm, another farm, three farms, ranches, as you call them, they're a little bigger farm. They had a big outdoor platform, and they had accordion and music, and that Saturday night dance. See, that's the oldest job in their head, you know. I remember I driving a Model T truck that didn't even have a windshield on back in the early 20s. I was 16 years old, which was in 1923, 15 years old, 22. I drove all the way down to Rio Grande City, the little town that's next to the river, what they call that place, not too far from Rio Grande City. People living there, and drove down and truck and my brother drove a car, and he asked these different families whether they wanted to be taken in the cotton. They got all that stuff together. I slept on the truck that night. Next morning we'd start off and we'd bring them into the farm, driving about 20 miles an hour all day. And when we were through picking cotton, we'd take them back.
So you were using Mexicans, too.
Oh, that's right. Well, there are colored people from Central Texas. A lot of them have colored people, too. They do the same thing. See, those years, they didn't have no transportation, you see. In fact, we farmers didn't have much of transportation, but I'd haul them back.
You go pick them up and then...
Take them back,
you know. Do you remember
the wage? Oh, that very... At that time... It's been so long ago, I don't remember. It was, cotton didn't bring much, but 10 cents a pound. I do recall it was $1.75, $1.25, a 100 pounds for cotton. And if you'd make, anybody'd make $20 a week picking cotton, well, that was lots of money those years, you know. But, for the depression, you see. $20 those years would get better than $150 now. Yeah, I didn't need my driver's license, nothing, those years. You drive down the road now, that speed gate puts you off the road. Yeah, I drove all the way to San Antonio to pick up pants. Well, we used to plant a lot of vegetables at one time. We had vegetable sheds at Ropstown. We planted onions and cabbage and beets and spinach and radishes. And scattered it out there, and sometimes we were lucky and we hit. Sometimes I remember we had the most beautiful radishes, and we couldn't sell them. We couldn't get them away. We just bought them under again. So that all stopped. Change cycle. Now we have mostly grain. Cotton, very little cotton. And more cattle now. That's the trend that's going now. In this area is grain. Grain, cattle, and little cotton. At the present time, that's the way it's going now.
Could you tell us something about the Depression, the
mention
of Depression? What was it like here in
Bishop
at the time of the Depression?
The time of the Depression was right after I got married. I lived on the farm. Dad passed away in 1928, November 28. I married in 29, February 11th in Squareville. I had over 30 head of hogs. Patch, I want to do this. We'd always butcher our own hogs and we'd make our sausage with hams and bacon. I had my smokehouse just filled with hams and bacon. Children, you know, were too small. They were just 2 years old and 3, 4 years old. Brother came over and said, "What in the world are you going to do with all these hams and bacon?" I said, "Well, I can't sell the hogs, and I'm used to always, my dad used to butcher with us 4 or 5 every year, so I just wanted to have a butcher to kill him. Just doing it this way. I wish I'd have it now." Well, you couldn't, a farmer couldn't even borrow the money from the bank. It was depression, it was bad. Everything was worthless. You couldn't sell anything, couldn't get nothing for it.
Do you recall any banks broke, or did you have any experience here?
Yes, there were a few banks went broke. But a farmer wanted to borrow some money, you know, on a crop, so they finally organized a government deal. They borrowed money and they had to open the lobster. So you have to mortgage all of your stock and your equipment and everything, and buy enough money to, you know, to make a truck. Bank got the way they wouldn't use water no more. It was getting so short. I remember that.
Did any farmers really have
it? They would have. Little farmers, you know, could exist because they were most of the stuff at home to live on. They raised their own chickens and hogs, not the lard, not the butter, not the milk. They had eggs, they had everything they needed, had plenty of grain, raised garden, so they didn't hardly have to buy anything but coffee, sugar, baking powder, salt and pepper, and a few things like that, and they could live. And good living. Better than we have now. And all that cheaper. Because we was, everybody raises his own stuff, you know. So therefore, you know, we, the smaller farmers got by all these things. But it's the great big farmers that farm thousands of acres are the ones that would have gone broke if the government hadn't stepped in and done something. They couldn't exist.
What about the county and
the
commission? How did they manage?
Well, I can't tell you that. You know?
Do you remember a bank robbery that took place in Bishop? Could you tell us about that?
Well, I know the two men really well. It was Mr. Harlan, brother Pierce Harlan. Now, Pierce Harlan's still living, and his brother living in Bishop. In fact, I'm doing half build his home. He came in there and started shooting, stole on over, man, the evening, they left. And he didn't get any money. The Harlan just didn't give it to him. I remember that when that happened.
What bank was it about?
First State Bank, it was. It was, the building is still standing there. It's still the First State Bank Bishop today, but it's on a different stockholders and everything. And then the other two, they got a new building now. You want to go to Bishop?
Yes.
Well, as you go to Bishop, the first light, which is Main Street, turn to your right, it's on that same block, the corner building. It's got to stand around, you know. As you go to the right, before you cross the other street, it's a constable's and sheriff's office now. That's where it was right there. That was the back building. God, I don't recall. But I don't recall. I think it was in the 30s.
Did he ever catch
the money? Yes. Yeah, he didn't get far. And I don't remember, you know. I don't think he did too much because he didn't get anything.
Was there just one man, or were they?
I think it, that I don't remember either. I don't know. Not over two, I know.
What was the reaction of the city?
Oh, well.
A little excitement.
A little excitement for a while. At that time, you know, they didn't have radio and TV. They didn't make much excitement. Nowadays, you know, if something happens, the whole country knows about it.
Do you recall anything about hurricanes and droughts?
Oh, I sure do. 1916 was the first hurricane that ever hit Bishop. I was 9 years old. And we had a building acre, cotton rig and pick. We had a half a bowl of pick. Beautiful crop. August the 15, I think it was, 1916. It was about 9 o'clock in the morning. Black blue clouds came up out of the east. Now, as a little kid like I was hoping the rain so it didn't have to pick up. But there came the clouds, and it didn't take too long, it started raining. We got in the house, we had a half a barrel on the wagon in the shed. And my older brother, he's still living today, he's in the hospital right now, had an operation last week, I want to go see him. He had come from Bishop, and that they thought they had a telegram to people that there was a storm. So that's the only way in the world we could find out. Well, we didn't know where the storm was, a great storm. So it rained, kept raining, and kept raining. Me and my brother, he was about 5 years older, he's the one that got the grocery store. He passed away, and he was playing marbles on the lawn. And finally, he came along and said, "You better stop this, sir. It's getting really bad, it's a storm." We had a windmill, and they were going to go out there and tie that windmill down, keep it from blowing away. They got up halfway, they came back down. We had our mules and horses in the lot. We had a two-story barn and a little harness barn. I remember that mule was standing next behind that little mule just watching that wind. So it just picked this mule up and just set it right over this mule, touched that mule. And Dad and my older brother run out there and Dad says, "Let's turn those mules and horses out in the pasture and get away." We did. We just watched. The first thing we had was our windmill. See, the wind gets strong and stronger. Then the next thing, the roof started peeling off, tin and all, and one piece of tin starts when the wind gets on there, it just was it all. Our barn went. Lost the whole barn, every building on the place, our cotton, off the trailer, truck, wagon, everything was blown out, and the roof was off the shed. And at night it got all on, about 10 o'clock that night, it was dark, and all this rain, you know, in this house, it's just a common old box house we were living in. It's just a mile this other side of the Dutch farm there. And that old black mud, you know, and that house was just rocking like a rocking chair. See, and that wind, you know, and that black dirt, you know, those rocks, you know. Mother said, "Let's go out next to that picket fence of that tree we got there and just walk myself up or get on that table to do something." And Daddy says, "Don't worry." I said, "Our house will be off the blocks before long." And it did. It just, you know, pushed it over the blocks was pushed over, you know. And he said, "Now we can go to bed." We went to bed, of course I was just about 9 years old. I went to bed, we woke up next morning, and there wasn't a cloud on the sky, it was just as clear. It was just like a different world. All our cotton and this green, white, you know, cotton was all stripped to just stems. All our buildings was blown away and everything. The only thing stood our house. Never took no roof off or nothing. But it pushed it over the blocks. But we lost everything. We never picked a bowl of cotton again. That was my first experience of Gulf Storm, 1916. Had to do it. Then, of course, there was another one in 1919. We didn't get too much out of that.